You are listening to the BC Lions Den Podcast, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
To the right side, play action fake to Brown, Moule on a roll, downfield wide open, it's the record for G. Roy Simon. He has caught Milt, and Simon says he's the all-time CFL pass receiving leader. At the four-yard line, 4 yards separating McManus and the Lions from a trip to the Grey Cup. Doesn't get better than this. McManus, end zone, touchdown Lions! BC's going to the Grey Cup!
What's going on, Lions fans? Welcome to episode 139 of the BC Lions Den.ca podcast, brought to you by Metal Rocks, original handmade, one-of-a-kind jewelry made right here in BC. Check out their link on our website and see all the great custom pieces that they have to offer. I'm your host, Brian Walrishan, and I want to thank you for downloading and subscribing to the show. The BC Lions return from their first bye week of the season with the task of trying to dig out of the huge hole they find themselves in after compiling a 1-6 record over the first 7 games of the season. We'll talk about how they can do that with former BC Lion and current Lions radio color man Giulio Caravetta of TSN 1040 Radio. We'll also check in with the Ticats and play-by-play man Marshall Ferguson of TSN 1150 in Hamilton. And I have a rant about the state of some BC Lions social media followers and how they're crossing the line with some of their online interactions with the club. Let's bring in Mojo Kemp now. And after we took the week off to recharge our batteries, Mojo, are you coming back with the hope and the belief that this team can turn things around?
Hey, Brian. Hey, everybody. Thanks for downloading the show. Man, you know, I always try to be that positive guy, Brian. But I got to admit to you and everybody else, I don't know that I've been ever this low as a Lions fan. Even in 2011, it wasn't this bad. And I am, to answer your question, no. No, I'm not really feeling a whole lot of hope. In fact, Brian, this week is the first time in CFL Pick'em I don't pick the Lions.
You know, when we entered the bye week, you were kind of hoping for some roster changes. We both were. But the reality is there just isn't a lot you can do at this point in the season. NFL camps are in full swing, so there aren't many guys around with you know, that kind of CFL experience that you can bring in. American players who have never played in the league take time to adjust. So with the exception of one trade and perhaps a bit of roster shuffling, the Lions come out of the bye week as they went into it, Mojo.
Yeah, and I understand that, Brian. You know, I understand that. But something needed to happen. Something needed to change. I mean, you never want to see a guy lose his job. But really, you know, and I don't want to, I know Devon's in charge and Ed Hervey's in charge. But, you know, if this is Wally's team, someone would have gotten fired. I don't know who, not that I wanted that, but it sends a message to the rest of the guys that this ain't good enough.
Yeah. And the thing is, too, we've talked about this in past episodes where their scouting staff has failed them. You know, I have to believe that at this point because, you know, there's not even guys on the practice roster that you can say, okay, well, we think this guy's ready, so we're going to pull this guy out and you know, see what this guy can do. They have brought up Philip Norman off the practice roster. He's going to start at center this week. He played tackle last game. You know, they did make a couple of changes, just 2 changes to the roster over the bye week. The first being the addition of tackle Justin Renfro in a deal with Calgary. I spoke with Ryan Ballantyne of the Horsemen. He tells me that Renfro was a guy that just wasn't going to get to play in Calgary. Now, that said, he stuck around on the Stampeders practice roster for a couple seasons, and the Lions reportedly tried to pluck him from their practice roster, forcing the Stamps to activate him recently. So John Halfmeagle must have seen something in him to keep him around. And, you know, he did the wise thing and got a trade out of Ed Hervey.
Yeah, you don't stick around for a couple of years, even on a practice roster, if you have no chance.
Well, especially on a John Halfmeagle team. I mean, if he sees enough into you keep you around, you got to be a half decent player anyway. So we're going to see what he can do this week as he starts at the right tackle spot. The second move was to release practice roster receiver Marquise Bundy and to bring back receiver Joey Augustin, who you might remember was a late cut out of training camp. From what we've been told, Bundy simply wasn't showing the progress in practice, so Augustin will take his spot on the practice roster and won't have an immediate impact, but that's the other small change they made there, and there'll be a few lineup shifts I'm sure this week as they travel to Hamilton.
Yeah, well, that harkens back to what I just said, right? Getting rid of a practice roster guy does not send much of a message. Sorry. You know, it just doesn't.
No, but if, like I said, if you don't have the depth on your practice roster and there's not many players available out there that can help you, there's really not much they can do. They're going to have to look within and look at themselves in the mirror and hopefully come back from this break refreshed. But, you know, on a bye week, there isn't much we can talk about that's new. So let's talk about some of the hot topics that have been bouncing around out there. And we'll start with the status of the coaching staff, which is one area where they may have been able to make a change, but you have coaching cap considerations, etc. With a 1-6 record, the natives are getting restless, of course, and of course the hosts of this podcast are among them. The calls are already coming for the firing of Devon Claybrooks, and it would seem offensive coordinator Jarius Jackson as well. Arguments can be made that the staff hasn't been able to fix the issues that have plagued the team. Arguments can be made that regarding leaving Mike Riley in games when it was clear the win was out of reach and he was taking a pounding. I don't agree with any notion that Claybrooks should be fired. This is his first season as the head coach. You know, he's done a lot of his time. He's done his time in a good football system, and he's going to make mistakes. He's a good football man. Jarius Jackson is a bit of a different story for me. He's been here for a couple of years now, and the offense has kind of sputtered along under his guidance. And I know he worked with Mike Riley before, but there has to be some improvement, and there's been little to no improvement in game plans or adjustments to help what the Lions' deficiencies are. But the bottom line is, again, who do you replace them with at this point in the season? The CFL's new operation cap comes into play as well. I don't see any changes this season. In my mind, Claybrooks should get another year to try and develop and put his stamp on this team. You know, I'm going to have a bit more to say about this to close out the show, but Mojo, what are your thoughts?
I don't think Devon Claybrooks should be fired. I'm strictly in, you know, you got to give a guy a chance, and he deserves a full season or two. I mean, I'm not one of those fire the coach guys. However, you know, you have to question surrounding a first year head coach with so many rookie positional coaches as well. Right. You know, I don't see how I don't want to be, man, I'm trying really hard, Brian, to be a positive guy. But some of those rookie coaches, and I get it, there's a salary cap and everything else, but you just got to wonder, right, if they're too close to the players. That's my wonder there, because they're all ex-players. Except for Rich Stubler, maybe he is an ex-player, and I don't know, but maybe they're just too close to the guys.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't know if hiring all this inexperience was a good idea. You know, these are all guys that have been great players in this league, but you know, to be put in charge of certain aspects of the team at this point without really paying their dues as coaches, I think has hurt the Lions in a couple of situations this year. I think there's times when they've been outcoached and haven't been able to make the adjustments. But you know, the two guys in the most important positions have been around. Jarius Jackson has been around for a while now and has put in his time. You know, of course, Rich Stubler has been around this league since the dinosaurs were roaming the earth. So I think that you know, in those two positions, you've got experienced guys, and maybe it's in the other positions that, it would be nice to have some guys with experience to kind of help these guys out and get them back on track. But, hopefully they all learn from this, and I don't know what kind of changes we're going to see at the end of the season, but I think 7 games into his first season, it's rather ridiculous to suggest that Devon Claybrook should be fired. That brings us to the other name coming out of fans' mouths, and that's GM Ed Hervey. This offseason, Hervey made some big moves. He promised that this team would be built from the line of scrimmage out on both sides of the ball, and so far we haven't seen that. He let popular players walk, and some fans haven't forgiven them for that as well. I think the big issue right now is the scouting has failed this plan, and I think that they weren't able to find quality guys to provide enough depth. They weren't able to find an offensive tackle to bookend with Joel Figueroa. Hopefully they have one now in Justin Renfro. They weren't able to find that linebacker to replace Solomon Elamamian or a defensive end who can get to the quarterback. And you could also argue that they overestimated the talent that they do have in some positions. At this point, I think it's fair to say that Ed Hervey has missed his targets on multiple levels. But the thing to remember here is this was phase one of a rebuild. You know, last year was kind of half him and half Wally. This is the first year he's had a chance to put his stamp on this team. But we'll need to see some progress here soon. But I think like Claybrooks, Hervey gets another year to right the ship here. His first year in Edmonton wasn't great either, but they won the Grey Cup soon after that.
Yeah, I think there's nothing. I can't argue any of your points there, Brian, for sure. I'm one of those guys that, I'm not a big Ed Hervey guy. I wasn't when he was a player. I wasn't when he was the GM in Edmonton. I wasn't when he let Rolly Lambala go. So it's. And I don't think he should get fired either, but I'm just not in his camp right now, man. I'm just not buying what he's laying down at the moment. Is he, he's a good football man. He's been around a long time more as a player, but we'll see, right? I don't think he deserves to get fired from the job, but we better see some improvements at the end of the year and next year as well, or else then we really got to start to question that position, right?
Yeah, and I think, during this offseason, I bit, hook, line, and sinker on what he was preaching. You and I were both at the commissioner's address where he spoke to Lions fans, and he was very confident in his comments and told us that we were going to be, to sit back and wait to see what they were going to do. My confidence has been shaken a little bit, I'm not going to lie, in Ed Hervey. He's got to prove to me that he can find players. I don't think, as I said earlier, I don't think they've done that. I don't think they've gone out and found the talent that they need to find if you're going to go the rebuilding route and put your stamp on a team. There's definitely work that has to be done here and some progress that has to be made. And, I'm not as confident in Ed Hervey as I was prior to the season. So he's going to have to show myself and other Lions fans that he can get this thing done. And I think he can, but I'm going to take what he says with more of a grain of salt from now on, that's for sure, until we see some results. So we come back after the bye with pretty much the same team we entered into it with. Let's hope the players and coaches come back refreshed and with a new mindset. On paper, this team is not as bad as their record shows, but time is up and they have to start putting things together starting this weekend in Hamilton Mojo. And after this is another game in Winnipeg, who are looking pretty good against the Stamps tonight as we record this show. So it's a tough go for the Lions here. They've dug themselves a huge hole and they got two teams to climb over. They can't finish tied with either one of those teams, Edmonton or Saskatchewan. So this is a big hole they find themselves in and they're going to have to go on a run.
Yeah, I was looking at the schedule and I think it's actually Hamilton, Winnipeg, Hamilton here, isn't it? Or something like that.
Yeah.
It just doesn't get any easier, Brian. And, we always used to look for those sort of gimme kick around games. Who's the kick around team? And you know what, folks, when you look around the league and you can't see the kick around team, it's probably because your team is now the kick around team. Yeah. So it, Brian, it's not hard to see 1-10.
Yeah, I mean, 1-8 for sure. If they don't get a couple wins here, and there's no coming back from that. I don't care what anyone says about this being the CFL and that kind of stuff. I mean, 1-6. I don't want to hear about 2011. That was a different team. I just think it has to start this week.
it has to start this week and carry over into Winnipeg and get on a bit of a roll here because, you know, I think once they get a couple wins in a row, maybe this team will start to find some confidence. You know, we're going to talk about here the changes that they made on the offensive line in that combination this week against the Ticats. We mentioned Justin Renfro, the newcomer, will start at right tackle. David Foucault slots in at left guard. Suk Chung returns from injury at right guard. And, of course, Joel Figueroa at the left tackle. Interesting switch here is Philip Norman, who played right tackle against the Riders, will take over the center position this week, while Hunter Stewart will be the sixth offensive lineman. No sign of Brett Boyko this week. So let's hope this group is the answer and we start to see a marked improvement in protection in the running game. They can stay healthy and get some cohesiveness in that unit, and we can start to see Mike Riley do what he was brought here to do.
It all revolves around that offensive line, Brian. You know that. I know that. The fans, listeners, we all know it starts with the offensive line. And they've been sort of underwhelming so far this year, like a lot of the Lions. You know, Suk Chung was brought here to have an edge. Let's see that edge, man. Let's see something. Man, they gotta be better. They gotta be better. And it starts with Suk Chung and Joel Figueroa. You know, and yeah, you're right. Where's Brett Boyko? We've been waiting for this guy for years.
Yeah, and it's also on the defensive side of the ball as well, right? They got to get pressure on the quarterback and help out that secondary and the linebackers, because, you know, that's been a huge issue as well. As much as we talk about the offensive line, and we have mentioned the defensive line, but, you know, most fans are looking at that offensive line now as the major problem, and it is, but it's equally as major on the defensive side of the ball, because we're not getting pressure on the quarterback and teams are getting better. Other quarterbacks like Trevor Harris and Cody Fajardo and, you know, Arbuckle and Calgary, they're just sitting back there and picking their chances off against us and, you know, because they don't have any pressure. So that's equally as important, I think, is to get that defensive line going as well.
Well, Brian, let's hope this is the week they turn it around, man, because they gotta, like you mentioned, they gotta start turning it around. Or not only are the playoffs gone, somebody's going to lose a lot of money in the fact that nobody's going to be showing up for games.
Let's continue our Lions discussion now with someone who is around the team often and should have a good gauge on where this team is now and where it can go in the future. It's our pleasure to welcome back former BC Lion and current Lions radio color analyst, Giulio Caravetta of TSN 1040 back to the Den. Giulio, welcome back. Thanks for taking some time to chat with us tonight.
Oh, anytime. Nice to be here.
Giulio, there's no doubt this has been a tough season for the Lions so far, and I don't think anyone expected the Lions to be this bad 7 games into the season, especially after bringing in Mike Riley this offseason. In your eyes, what's been the biggest issue with this team, and is it fixable coming out of a bye week that hasn't seen many changes?
Yeah, you know, that's an excellent point. I think all of us that follow the team, I think we're probably a little surprised that more wasn't done, you know, during the bye week. You know, they did address the right tackle position with Justin Renfro in the trade with Calgary. So the other thing, too, is they haven't been at practice this week, and seeing what they've done up front on the offensive line, I think that's one of the things that clearly they felt was that needed to be changed was their strength up front. And they've moved Philip Norman now to center. So they've gone from having four Canadians on that offensive line to now just two. So that's a big change. So, you know, the way I look at it, trust me, I've had a lot of, you know, sleepless nights after games thinking about what's wrong with this team, because like everybody else, I thought they were going to be much, much better. But I think it's safe to say that, you know, a few of the guys that have been brought in and that were here, the expectation and what they were going to bring to the table this year, just hasn't materialized. You know, there's been a few guys that have underachieved, and when you have, you know, you put, you know, 2, 3, 4 of those guys together, you know, that's a big hit for any football team to take. When you have guys that just aren't playing up to what, you know, you thought they were going to, that's tough to overcome. And, you know, through injury or through, you know, a new system and all those kinds of things, maybe that's why they've kind of underachieved. But I think that's been the biggest setback, is that a lot of guys who they expected some, you know, big things just never materialized or haven't materialized to this point.
I want to ask you about Mike Riley because you're around him often. You have opportunities to speak with him. Do you sense his confidence has wavered at all? Because to me, on the outside looking in, I've seen some frustration on his face at times. He's looked defeated. How much of a toll has this start taking on him, not just physically, but mentally?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I think that everything that you said is absolutely bang on. I think that, Mike, he's a prideful guy, right? He's a guy that, cares a great deal about, his play and how he's regarded around the league. And, this has been a big blow to him. No question. There's no way that he expected this. And I think what ends up happening is that, his confidence, like anybody else's confidence, is wavered, right? He's I think, doubting himself and doubting, the pieces around him. And that's something that he's going to have to try to find a way out of. But there's a lot of pressure on his guy, right? And I think he wears it. He carries a heavy, heavy load, not only on the field, but off the field. He's clearly the leader of this football team and a guy that, when he speaks, a lot of people listen. But, he's also got to worry about a lot of other things. And I think, Mike needs to have some good things happen, like a lot of the guys do. They need to have some good things happen to them early in a football game to gain some of that confidence back. And I think that once that happens, that this is a team that, could really go, start, making some noise. They've dug themselves a huge, huge hole. And this next road trip is going to be massive for this football team because, on the road against Hamilton, against Winnipeg, if you can somehow win these two games, you're going to put yourself right back in the mix. But that's a big ask, right? Given where they were and what, where they are, to do that against those two teams is going to be a big, big task.
Hey, Julio, Coach Stubler aside, this is a pretty young coaching staff led, of course, by first-year head coach Devon Claybrooks. Some fans have already got their hands on the trigger wanting him fired, which is probably a premature reaction to things, which is probably what those type of fans deal with on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. Julio, I'm wondering, personally, there's a lots of ex-players as the coaches. I'm wondering, are the coaches too much player coaches? Are they too close to the players, maybe? Yeah. Or but what's your opinion on the staff? And Julio, what do you have to say?
Yeah. Well, I think that that's a very fair assessment. I think that when the coaching staff was announced, I think all of us were like, wow, that's a young staff, right? Outside of Stoops, Jerry's Jackson's still a relatively young coach. Marcus Howell's still relatively young, But you look at Nick Lewis and Drew Tate, Taylor Attilio, those kinds of guys, this is their first kind of kick at the can as being, position coaches and full-time coaches. And, it's been a big step for them. And again, anytime whether you're a young player or a young coach, there's going to be some growing pains there. There's no question about it. When you have a few of those guys now on your staff and they're, you're put into this situation, which hasn't been good. They start losing their confidence. They start questioning what they're doing and how they're doing things. And so, this experience that they're going through is going to be so valuable for them down the road. I know it's probably hard for them to think about down the road right now, but it's going to be one of those things that they can go back to. But going through it now at this young stage of being a coach is very, very difficult because you need to draw on some of those older guys and the experience that they've gone through to try to get yourself out of this and try to keep a positive attitude. And it's tough. So I think that, that's a very valid point. I know it's a lot of things. It's a lot of what people say around the league when you go to visiting cities and having teams come in. A lot of the reporters and coaching staff that I know that are out there, they'll say the same thing. They got a young staff and, a lot of people questioned it going into the season. So it'll be interesting to see if they can weather the storm and be able to pull themselves out of it because they're like the players, are struggling with their confidence, right? They're human beings as well. And I'm sure they're searching for answers. They're trying to do things differently. They're trying different combinations. They're trying to do some different things. And none of it to this point seems to be working, but you know, you got to keep at it, right? You got to still keep your nose to the grindstone. You got to keep putting the time, putting the effort, and hopefully it's going to pay off at some point.
The offensive line's had its issues all season. We don't have to get too much into that, but I want to narrow it down though, Julio.
Yes.
The revolving door at center.
Yes.
How bad has that hampered this team's progress? Center's the position, right?
Yeah. The quarterback of the offensive line. Yeah. There's no question. They've struggled up front. There's no question. And the other part of that is struggle. It's been injury. It's been a lack of consistency with certain guys in certain spots. And it's been poor play. You know, let's be honest, right? That some of those guys haven't played up to what their, you know, what the expectations were. So I think, like, having you say, like, you know, that when they came out of the bye and there wasn't, like, everyone was like, well, everyone thought there was going to be, you know, a trade or more of a shakeup. But when they really like Justin Renfro at right tackle now, and moving Philip Norman to center, now you've got three Americans up front, and they feel that should solidify that offensive line. Now, having said that, you know, the hope is that you can now start to develop some consistency, because we've all been around the game long enough to know that, you know, that particular part of the game, that area of the game, the offensive line, it's about continuity, it's about trust, it's about knowing the guy beside you and believing that he's got your back. And if, you know, there has to be a lot of instinct that goes on up front, like believing that when you pass a guy off inside, that guy is going to pick him up, because you're seeing the same look on defense. So those are the kinds of things that you need, but you develop them through the continuity and the consistency. And they haven't had it, again, as I said, because of injury, because of you know, poor play. And so it all starts up front at the center spot, right? If you get that confidence up front, they're calling the right fronts, calling the right blocking schemes, and so much of that stuff changes on the fly, then that's going to be a positive. So hopefully they found their guy in Philip Norman, and they can move forward. Because, again, guys, I mean, we can't keep revolving the door around and around and around with, you know, trying different combinations. They've got to settle in on something and let the guys play and try to work through it.
It hasn't been the same since they released Rolly Lambala.
Yeah. Rolly was a very, very, you know, very, very good player, and not only a great player, but also a great influence in the locker room, right? A real leader, understood the game. And again, a guy who has been here, you know, through some great times, and, you know, knows how to, you know, communicate and talk to people and motivate and all those kinds of things. And when you got a lot of young players and young coaches, right, you sometimes, you know, you need guys like that. And, you know, for obvious reasons, you know, they had to make those kinds of moves in order to, you know, bring some other guys on the roster. And, you know, I believe that that's kind of hurt them. But, you know, there's nothing you can do about it, right? And unless they have any plans of bringing him back, which I haven't heard, they've got to try to find the next Rolly Lambala, and that's going to be the challenge.
It's hard to judge the receivers on this team outside of Brian Burnham, who's understandably the go-to guy for Mike Riley.
Yeah.
And Lamar Durant had a good start, but has been quiet the last few games, and everybody's favorite whipping boy, Daron Carter, has yet to break out. Is it fair to judge this group when the guy delivering the ball is running for his life on nearly every snap from scrimmage?
Yeah, that's a very good point, right? I mean, it all goes hand in hand, right? It all starts at the offensive line. If they can block and get that consistency, then the quarterback's going to have more time. The quarterback has more time. He's able to throw the ball downfield to the receivers. It also opens up the running game. All those things they all fit in. It's all part of that chess match, right? You know, I think you make a very good point, right? I think it's been hard to evaluate. I know, you know, people have expected more out of Daron Carter, me included. But it just hasn't materialized, right? And as I said, I mean, that a lot could be, you know, because of that O-line and the breakdowns and not having enough time. And some of it can be, you know, that he's not running the right routes and he's not in the right spot at the right time. And that's all part of, you know, developing that chemistry with the quarterback. But I think you're right. I think it's very difficult to, you know, to judge that group based on, you know, what was happening on, you know, different parts of the field, right? So you know, I'm sure you guys would agree, right? If you know, at the beginning of the year, when we put all these pieces on the table, I think we all would have said, you know, there's nobody across the league that wouldn't have said, yeah, that's a pretty good group. You know, that you can be successful with that group. And no one saw this coming. You know, in all this, you talk about the receivers, you know, with Burnham and Carter and Durant. The one guy I think that's really kind of, you know, quietly kind of, you know, upped his game is Shaq Johnson. You know, I think Shaq's developed a nice chemistry with Mike, and Mike is going to him more and more on second down when he needs a play. You know, he's looking for Shaq, and Shaq's delivered, right? I think Shaq's had some big catches for this team in crunch time and has looked really good.
On the defensive side of the ball, it's the same thing on the line of scrimmage, where the Lions have failed to generate any sort of consistent pass rush, and we're unable to find a defensive end that is any kind of threat. You combine that with the loss of Solomon Elamimian, and the front seven has really struggled this year. What are the issues there? And again, does this team have enough good players in those positions?
Yeah, I think you said it right. You mean, excuse me, you know, Claudell Lewis and Devon Coleman haven't been anywhere near what they were last year, right? And same with Odell Willis. And they, you know, they had Matt Boson out there at that end spot. And, you know, and I know at the beginning of the year, that was the one thing that Ed admitted, you know, right coming out of training camp, was that, you know, they needed to try to find the next Odell Willis. They needed to try to find the next guy. And that's why they had, you know, how many defensive ends come in. I just haven't been able to find that guy. And that's proven to really have hurt them. And then, you know, you talk about losing Solly. You know, that's the one thing, guys, that when you don't have a dominating pass rush, when you don't have four guys that get after it, you know, usually the really good teams, they have four guys that rush the passer, and you're going to have to keep five guys, sometimes six, to block. And that means that you're not getting a guard or a center going out onto the next level or going to the linebackers to look for a block, because they have to keep themselves in because they're so concerned. Let's be honest. Philip Norman is not probably going to be going downfield to look for, Simone Lawrence at the second level because they got Ted Laurent in front of him, right? And that's going to be a job in itself is to block him, right? So you see where I'm going with this, right? It's all, again, we talked about the offensive line and how when they're doing well, you know, all the other pieces seem to fall into place. Well, the same can be said about the defensive line, right? When you're doing your job up front there and the team or the offense isn't allowed to get out to the middle linebacker, then the middle linebacker is free to make a tackle, right? And you get a guy like Solomon and Biggie, those guys, that's where they made their living, right? We had good defensive lines here. They were worried about that. And then all of a sudden you're letting Adam Big Hill and Solomon Elamimian run around free, looking to make tackles, and those guys aren't going to miss very often, right? So their linebackers have suffered because, you know, they got offensive linemen coming out on them and getting in the way and not allowing them to kind of run from sideline to sideline. And that, again, hurts. It hurts the linebackers, and it also hurts the secondary, because if you can't get pressure, that means you have to bring secondary pressure. And if you give the quarterback too much time, now he's able to exploit, I think, a really good secondary, given the guys that they have. But, you know, when you give the quarterback the kind of time that they've been getting, it's tough to stop, right?
Hey, Julio, how much do you put at the feet of Ed Herbie?
Yeah, you mean, I know what you're saying, right? And I think what I always try to do is, you know, because I won't lie, guys, because I take my dog for a walk every night, and I have a couple of neighbors that will race out and tell me, you know, what the hell's going on with that football team, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, I've talked about it so much, but, you know, the thing is that, you know, as I said, if we're really honest with ourselves, at the beginning of the year, if you would have put this lineup on paper, you would have said, on defense, okay, the defensive end, they got to find a guy, but, you know, that may be the one weakness. I think, in fairness to Ed, is that I think that he's put a lot of faith in certain guys, and some of those guys have really underachieved. And they haven't played well. Now, why haven't they played well? That's the second question you have to ask yourself. Is it the system? Are you asking a player to do more than what they're capable of? Are you asking them to, you know, do something that they haven't had to do before? That's what you have to ask yourself. And I know I have talked to Ed about this, and he's done those very things, right? He looks at it as critical as anybody. He's not a type of guy that's going to be happy with the team's performance. But at the same time, it's very, very difficult at this time of the year to make a change and go out and find some guys when, you know, the NFL is just, you know, starting. We'll start to make cuts. Their first game is this week. So, you know, you're still a couple, 3 weeks away from guys getting cut. And then you've got guys who are waiting on the XFL, who are waiting and not coming up here, who are saying, you know, I'm not going to come up there. I'd like to wait for the XFL and see what opportunities I can get there. There are other guys that don't have passports and don't have any desire to get a passport. So there's a lot of things that go in. Like Ed, I know, has tried. He's turned over every rock possible to make this team and roster better. But, you know, sometimes it just doesn't work out. So I think in fairness to him, he's tried. But some of the players that he brought in have really underachieved. And that's been a huge, huge disappointment for not only him, but for everybody else associated with the team.
Last one for me, Julio. There's been a lot of negative stuff. You mentioned Shaq Johnson. Give me a couple of guys that you're excited about. Tell me a couple of guys that are actually having a good season.
Yeah. Well, you know, I love the signing of Aaron Grimes when he came. I think TJ Lee has done a very, very good job. I think Brandon Dozier is starting to fill in very nicely at that safety spot. As I said, I really like Shaq. I think that the play of both John White and Brandon Rutley has been, you know, when they've been given the opportunity, they have been very good. And I think they need to lean on those guys. And I think that that's one of the things that you're going to see potentially this week is them really, you know, with those big guys up front, that's a big offensive line that they're going to really try to run the football and be effective doing that. So, you know, those are a few guys that I think that have, you know, that have had decent years, and they're hopefully, you know, some other guys in the second half are going to be able to, you know, step up their play and play better. But as I said, there's a lot of guys that have underachieved to this point.
Julio, it's not their, it's not just their record of 1-6 that hurts the Lions' chances of turning this around. It's the fact they've already lost two season series to West Division rivals Edmonton and Saskatchewan, and let's forget 2011 because that was a different team. Does this team have it in them to claw back into the playoff picture in your eyes?
Well, I mean, that's a really good question. To be really honest with you, yes. Because I look at some of these other teams, it's not like there's somebody in the West that is overpowering everybody. You know, I just see this as a very, very equal division. And I think overall in the entire league, I just don't see, you know, I think Hamilton obviously has come back to the pack losing Masoli. You know what I mean? I would have said that they, to me, were maybe the best all-around team. I was never really sold on Winnipeg, you know, as being they're a good team. Don't get me wrong. They're a very good team. I don't think they're a dominant team. You know, if they can find a way, like this is, you know, sometimes these kinds of things, if they can find a way to win a game on the road, if they can go into Hamilton and win, and then all of a sudden you're going to spend 3 or 4 days back east and you're going to the camaraderie, the team, they're going to have a good vibe around themselves to go into Hamilton or go into Winnipeg, you know, anything can happen, but it all starts in Winnipeg. It all starts in Hamilton, though, right? If you can find a way to win that football game, you know, a little bit of confidence with these guys could change everything. And as I said, the talent I think is there, but they at some point need to perform and you know, forget all the talking, forget everything else, and just go out there and play football and hopefully they can find that chemistry and that winning feeling that can change everything. Because I've been a part of teams like that. You know, once you get a couple of breaks and things start going your way, that everyone starts to believe in it again, and they have the talent there to really, you know, change things up. But again, you know, you gotta put it out. You gotta put it on the field. You gotta stop talking about it and just go out there and do it. And hopefully they can find a way to do that.
Julio, always a pleasure to chat with you. Thanks for taking the time with us tonight. And I'm sure you're like us, hoping things turn around starting Saturday in Hamilton. Safe travels to you on the way there. I guess you'll get back to some home cooking with mom and enjoy that for sure. And we'll talk to you again soon.
I really appreciate it, guys. Thanks very much for having me. And Yeah, I think you're right. A nice big box of homemade cannolis, maybe for the boys, might change it up too. So I'll try that.
You need two boxes, one for Mojo, one for Mojo.
That's right.
All right.
Thanks, Julio. Guys. Thanks very much.
Cheers.
Thanks, Julio.
Breaking this losing habit isn't going to be easy as the Lions return from the bye, having to travel to Hamilton to take on the East Division leading Hamilton Tiger Cats. For more on them now, we welcome Tiger Cats radio play-by-play man Marshall Ferguson of TSN 1150 in Hamilton to the show. Marshall, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me, guys. I'm sitting here trying to figure out how the hell every kick that Winnipeg receives in the Thursday nighter ends up getting taken back for a touchdown right now as we're taping this. So yeah. It's one of those things that we've all been kind of wondering about this year, and Winnipeg's at it again tonight, but it's good to join you.
Yeah, it looks like a pretty good game going on there for sure. Marshall, the Ticats got off to a running start, going 5-1 before losing late to the Riders last week. Talk about the makeup of this team and the job that first-year head coach Orlando Steinauer has done with this group, because you know, this is a guy who certainly paid his dues to finally get his shot.
Yeah, I like the way that Orlando kind of approached training camp right from the very start. It's one of those things that you kind of only get a sense for, I think, when you're around the team right from the very beginning. But for me, like, I think we all knew Orlando was going to be the next head coach of the Ticats. I think there was a lot of other teams out there that would have liked to have had him. But the Tiger Cats were very aware of that, and so they wanted to make sure they kind of protected him and they nurtured him and they kept him interested, and they did everything they could to kind of prepare him for this moment. And he went out of his way to prepare himself for this moment as well, right? You have to think, like, back at the start of his time in Hamilton, even as a player, he was constantly involved deeply in meetings, and he was somebody who was trying to get himself kind of into a rhythm and understanding not just defense but offensive systems as well. So I think it's a great situation for him to be in right now, where he's somewhere that he knows and he understands and he feels so comfortable, because it's allowed him to kind of seamlessly step into this role as being a head coach. But the way that he's crafted it, it's very similar to, I would say, almost like a college team, the way that he treats these guys, which I think is a bit of a unique perspective, because typically you will have a coach who steps in, does it. You know, a pro coaching job, and they want to treat everybody like they're grown men, and they want to, you know, you're professionals and I'm not going to get on you. He still gives players freedom. Don't get me wrong about that. But what he does is he actually gives them the ability to be able to say, like, at the end of practice, okay, let's get together and have a victory celebration at the end of everything. Let's leave music on during practice. Let's, you know, when you're at walkthrough, let's have it be up tempo and up and down the field and lots of fun. And there's just a lot of little things like that that I think I've noticed from him at practice, where it seems like he's very comfortable in his situation. And I think it shows the way that he coaches on the sideline as well so far.
Obviously, the Ticats and CFL fans really were dealt a big blow with the season-ending knee injury to quarterback Jeremiah Mazzoli. I think we all want to see the league's best players on the field. What can you tell us about Dane Evans as a player? And do you think he has what it takes to keep this team in contention for a Grey Cup?
Yeah, it's a tough one to say right now about the contention for a Grey Cup, because I don't think Dane has enough experience for me to be able to confidently say it. Now, all I can do is go off of what I know of what I've seen, right? And so what I've seen from him is somebody that I thought during the live mic broadcast in week 7 against the Bombers, he was in control of the huddle and he was very much down to earth and had the respect of everybody that was involved in that huddle. I think I see from him someone who has a really smooth release. He's got a very strong arm. I think his footwork is consistent. He's not very erratic with his play, which I think is a huge positive for anybody that's trying to coach him, because every quarterback is going to have kinks they got to work out of their game. But I think he's got a limited amount of kinks to work out of his game compared to some of the other backup quarterbacks in the league. Now, again, I would include Cody Fajardo in that, and he's gone gangbusters on everybody. So I guess that doesn't really matter all that much about how great your fundamentals and all the rest are. But I really do think that he's got a nice makeup as a player. I totally understand when you watch him play right now why the Ticats brought him in the first place and why they wanted to re-sign him to a 3-year deal. And I also understand why Dane wanted to re-sign a 3-year deal, because Jeremiah Masoli is such a great player when he's on, but he's very erratic at times. And I think Dane probably assessed that situation and thought to himself, like, if I get a chance to be in a place that wants me, that pays me decent money, where I can grow and develop as a player, that's tough to find in pro football, especially when you're somebody like Dane coming from Tulsa that hasn't really gotten a true NFL shot. So I like his game. I like his makeup. I like his personality. He's a fun interview. If you guys ever get an opportunity to be able to talk to him, he's like super, super honest. He's kind of like June Jones like that, which is, you ask him a question and even if he doesn't want to tell you the truth, he kind of does, which I love that about him, because that's a kind of rare honesty that you do not get very often. So his game, I think, will develop as the season goes on. And I think the important part here is that Tommy Condell and Orlando Steinauer are going to give him the opportunity to make mistakes. And I think that's important because any young quarterback, you cannot give them 6 inches worth of leash. You got to give them a full 24 inches and you got to say, okay, we understand that on the 10th inch and on the 18th inch and on the 22nd inch, you're going to make really bad mistakes. All we care about is by the time that we get to the end of that leash, that we trust you. And I think that's kind of the process they're going through right now. They're kind of feeling each other out. And every day at practice, they're getting a little bit more familiar with each other, which is honestly a fun process to watch because we haven't really seen that in Hamilton in the last couple of years. Because even when there was a turnover when it came to offensive coordinator or whatnot, you would end up getting yourself, basically the same quarterback and basically the same system. And even when they transitioned the system this year, Masoli still knew it because Condell was around the first time that Jeremiah was in and around. Condell is an offensive coordinator here in Hamilton. So the transition and the learning, I think, is a really unique experience that you don't get very often. Obviously, we'll wish that it wasn't under these circumstances because I feel for Jeremiah in a lot of different ways. But I think that Dane's going to do just fine as we keep moving forward.
Hey, Marshall, Dane Evans kinks aside, Brandon Banks is the man that makes that offense tick over on the Ticats. And full credit to June Jones for getting him involved in the offense last season. Is he the best player in the CFL right now? And how concerned are you with his turf toe issue? Because that's an issue that can linger.
Yeah, for sure. That's a difficult one when it comes to the turf toe because, I mean, I've known guys that have had that where it feels like your toe is locked for like years at a time, right? It doesn't really matter what you try to do to it. You can have it released. You can have it iced. You can use a lacrosse ball on it. You can roll your foot on a frozen water bottle every single day. If your toe wants to be bad for you, it's going to be bad for you, right? So I've seen him moving around at practice, and he's moved really smoothly. But I've also seen times where Brandon Banks has looked completely fine, and then he tweaks his hamstring in a game, and all of a sudden he disappears. Or there's been times where he's been banged up in a game, and he looks like he's out of the game. I think there was early in the season he went down, and we all thought the worst. It was like a lower body injury, and I didn't want to speculate on the broadcast, but I just remember thinking – like, man, this looks like he's going to be out for a while. And then the next play, he caught a 55-yard crossing route. And I'm like, oh, okay, I guess Brandon's back in the game. Like, I didn't even realize that he came back onto the field. So I don't think it's going to affect him all that much this week. Will it keep lingering? Yes. Does it have the possibility to get worse? Absolutely. That's kind of the nature of that injury. But and then in terms of is he the best player in the CFL, I think he's top five. I think he's top three in terms of effect that he has on the game when he's at his best. I do worry a little bit right now about that transition with Arbuckle that I was talking about, where I hope that Banks gets into a rhythm with him. Because to me, like, Brandon Banks is crazy explosive, but there's been receivers that I played with in my playing days who were crazy explosive. I wasn't the type of quarterback that could get it to the crazy explosive playmakers. Now, if Dane Evans and his big arm gets on the same page with Brandon Banks, then yeah, I mean, you're in good hands, right? At that point, you feel like you're in a pretty good spot. But for me, I almost expect like Luke Tasker to have a much more productive second half of the season. I expect maybe a Jalen Acklin, a young receiver out of Western Illinois. I think that he's somebody who could absolutely improve his production as well. Maybe the Tiger Cats share the ball a little bit more because it's been so bank-centric over the last little while with Masoli and with June Jones. But again, it's part of that evolution. I think everything's going to kind of change, and we all have perceptions of what we think is the reality of the Tiger Cats offense. And I certainly study it very closely, and I have my idea of what I think they are, but I'm always open to the fact that these things are constantly evolving and constantly changing. And I'm just excited to see where that goes. I hope that still includes a ton of all things Brandon Banks, because he is, like I say, one of the top players in the CFL when he gets the chance to get into a rhythm with his quarterback, but they got to get there first before I can say that.
Besides Masoli and Banks, the Ticats are a little banged up right now, Marshall. They lost Sean Thomas Erlington earlier this year. Reports this week say Dalvin Bro and Jagera Davis are banged up. Malik Irons has been put on the 6-game list and is going to be replaced by Cameron Marshall. Do you have any inside information on who else may be either coming back this week or who's going to miss this week?
Yeah, I think Adrian Tracy's probably going to be in the lineup from everything that I've seen so far. I would expect Jagera Davis to play. I'm not sure yet about whether he's going to be confirmed, but we find that out, I guess, on the usual schedule of the day and a half before the game. I think Davis, whether he's slightly banged up or not, I think he's just such a presence that you probably want him on the field, even if he's not 100% at this point. Malik Irons and Sean Thomas Erlington, it sucks. Those injuries are not ideal because they had a plan coming in they wanted to change up the way they were using their ratio, and now they kind of have to reassess things. So that's disappointing. And then Delvin Bro, I saw the reports that came out today from down at practice, and that's a loss for them. I would say that because he obviously is one of the better cover men in the CFL, despite the fact that Shaq Evans decided to go crazy on him in week number 8 when we were out there in Regina. But when I look at the way in which the Hamilton Tiger Cats secondary is built, it used to be, I remember even like 2 years ago, guys, where you would get in a spot, one guy would go down and there'd be like four changes, right? It's like, you know, the boundary halfback goes down, so the field half has to jump over, and then, well, you got to replace the field half with the boundary half, and then the field corner jumps in, and then there's a guy off the practice roster, and it was just like mayhem where you'd have one person go down and the chain of command was just awful because it would throw the entire secondary off. If he is out, if Bro can't go, Jamal Roll has gotten a lot of experience the last 2 years. Frankie Williams has turned into a real nice player and returner. And those two guys are legitimate corners. And I think Roll's probably going to fill in that void at boundary corner just because he's got that length more than anything else. But for my money, I really do think Bro is one of the bigger losses you could have on this entire roster just because he changes the dynamic of the entire defense. I mean, that I've talked to the Ticats free safeties before about him, and they say basically that half of the field, I mean, you're still aware of it, but you're not worried about it. And you just don't really treat it the same as other sides of the field, because why would you? Because there's a lockdown guy over there. So maybe that's why teams have started getting greedy and started going after him, because they realize that the Ticats are just kind of letting guys be iced up. And certainly Brian Burnham, Deron Carter, Lamar Durant, all those guys, when healthy and when at their best with Mike Riley as quarterback, they're pretty amazing to be able to see. So I would say that is a concern for the Ticats with Bro being down.
Well, you got to keep Mike Riley vertical before any of that happens. Yeah. Nick Shorthill filled in nicely for Simone Lawrence with 18 tackles over those two games that Lawrence served on his suspension. Lawrence returns this week, 28 days since he last played a game. What does he mean to this defense?
Yeah, he's the emotional soul. He's the mouthpiece. He's the energizer bunny, I would say, of the whole thing. It was pretty cool to watch Simone work at practice when he was suspended, because he took on a really unique leadership role that I don't think he would have taken on a couple of years ago. I know a lot of people just see the live mic and the chirping and the bravado and the towel on the head and all the kind of stuff on the sidelines and talking to the camera. But I mean, that's his personality. He's fun loving. He's a kid from Pennsylvania, didn't have much growing up, and made his way all the way out to become a huge part of a professional football organization where there's posters of him all around town. People in Hamilton adore that guy. So he soaks it in, as he should, based on where he's come from and the way that he's grinded to get to the point he's at where he is so respected. So him coming back is huge. I'll say this, though, too. Like, I played with Nick Shortle at McMaster, and Nick Shortle's a baller. Like, you guys must have seen the same things I did. He is everywhere. And I was actually talking to Steve Milton from the Hamilton Spectator today about that. And I said, like, that's who he's always been. And I'm amazed that not only does he not really get, like, that true starting opportunity, but when you look at the big picture of the CFL, are you telling me that that dude couldn't play the role of a Sam Hurl or even, you know, a smaller Enoch Mwamba that's got a little bit more sideline to sideline speed? Like, there are national linebackers getting chances around the league. When Bear Woods went down to Montreal, Shorta was really young in his CFL career. He filled in. There wasn't much of a drop-off. Simone Lawrence gets suspended. Nick Shorta goes in. There's not much of a drop-off. But then he just goes back to being the backup linebacker because that's the way the CFL works. So many of these linebackers just get relegated, especially the Canadian guys, to the background. I don't really think that's fair. Like, I don't want him to go anywhere because I think he's a great asset for Hamilton. But if there's a team that wants to call the Ticats and say, hey, we are willing to be able to give you X, Y, and Z for Nick Shortle, I don't know how they wouldn't at least contemplate it at this point. Or maybe they've got a long-term plan where eventually when Simone Lawrence is done in Hamilton, they go with Shortle because he'll be younger and less expensive. I'm not sure, but he's certainly a hell of a player. But they've got some nice depth there now as they get Simone back.
Who are the players on this Ticats team, both on offense and defense, who may not be household names to CFL fans, but have maybe impressed you this year?
Yeah, I think Jalen Acklin is the one on offense that jumps out to me. And again, doesn't have a ton of production, but he's a very talented receiver, former quarterback, guy that was a track star and all the rest at university. So I like the way that he plays the game. I think we saw him in training camp, and very, very quickly, he ended up kind of jumping into relevance, and we knew he was going to get an opportunity to start sooner rather than later. So I would say that was a big one. And then on defense, I would say, I guess across that defensive line, there's a couple of unsung guys on special teams that nobody really cares about. But like David Dean, if anybody was watching the Riders game last week, you saw him just run through two human beings. I think it was Lakan Adaiwu from University of Windsor and then Keen LaFrance as well. Like, he just went bang, bang and knocked him down like tall trees in the forest. It was crazy to see that. The whole stadium in Regina just kind of stopped. And David Dean, that's how he's going to make his money, right? Like, whether it's him or Eddie Richardson, who's another defensive lineman who's got some run on special teams this year, or there's a lot of different parts to this roster that I think they've done a nice job backfilling and finding some depth. But those, for me, I would say Jalen Acklin is the receiver and then a couple of defensive linemen. Again, not sexy. They're not going to get pubbed. They're not going to post a bunch of stats, and they're probably not going to make the difference in a win or a loss. But they do their job, and that's kind of their role in the team, and that's what this sport is all about to me, is just finding a role for everybody on the team and then kind of adapting to it.
Hey, Marshall, you follow the league closely, not just the Ticats, and you're great at breaking things down, as anyone who's listening to the show can tell. I'm feeling pretty low, Marshall, as a Lions fan. I need you to help me here. Do the Lions have what it's going to take to turn this thing around?
Yeah, I know exactly where you guys are right now, and I understand that feeling because a couple of years ago, the Ticats were 0-8, right? Like, I think we can all kind of understand if you've ever been in that spot where it feels hopeless, and I understand the BC Lions fan base right now where you're saying, like, we're not digging ourselves out of this. It's too big of a hole. We have too many flawed issues. I'm here to tell you, like, I understand the Tiger Cats that year made a switch from Ken Austin to June Jones, and that June Jones is historically, everywhere he's gone in his career, worked magic with organizations that have not had success. But I'm telling you, it's possible. Like, it really is. And I feel like once you get through that, just the sludge of we can't do anything right, once you get a couple of wins strung together, and keep in mind, I believe 7 of the next 8 games for the BC Lions are against the East. And so they've had a tough stretch on the schedule, along with being able to start off slow, along with having these innate flaws in their offensive line and at times in their defensive secondary. And so it is possible, guys. Like, I don't think anybody in this league needs to be down. I understand why you are. Absolutely. Like I said, because I've been around there and I've understood what the Ticats 0-8 start was. But the second half of the Ticats season that year was exciting as hell. Like, it was fun because you start to appreciate the little things that a team like Winnipeg doesn't appreciate right now, right? Like, you get a run from somebody out of the backfield in BC. Like, that's, you know, John White rips off a big one, or you know, he slips somebody in like a Brandon Rutley there, and he bursts ones for 35 yards down the sideline and late in the fourth quarter. To a team like Winnipeg, it's like, well, yeah, that's what Andrew Harris is supposed to do. To you guys, it's like, man, like, that's a great play. We haven't had many of those. You kind of start latching onto the small stuff, and I feel like it's inevitable that BC is going to get not just a couple of wins, but I would say more than a handful. And I think I have confidence in saying that because at some point, Mike Riley is going to pay off for the BC Lions. And I don't know, again, how they're going to be able to protect him, because there hasn't been big changes or scheme or otherwise. But I view him as being this golden thing that eventually is going to pay off, and eventually they're going to find the right way to be able to use him. And like I say, I don't think that's, as of yet, I don't think that's been found. But I do have confidence that it's going to happen sooner rather than later. And that's, I think, as long as you got him, you got a chance. And that's something that a lot of other teams can't say. A lot of other teams will win with their team alone, but there's too much talent on that BC roster for it to just completely go like this the whole season. And I don't think it's going to.
Thanks, man. That makes me feel better. Hey, Saturday is the annual Hall of Fame game for the CFL, and this year's class includes a couple of former BC Lions. Swervin Mervin Fernandez and wide receiver David Williams will get the call to the Hall, amongst others. For those of us who don't get a chance to attend the festivities, can you talk about that and some of the events that go on leading up to and at the game itself?
Yeah, absolutely. It's I kind of feel like Orlando Steinauer. We asked him about it the other day, and he said that he just kind of feels like a kid. Like, he feels like he just gets to appreciate the history of the game during this week. And I love this week because I feel like we constantly kind of get zeroed in covering football and the weekly grind. And you guys right now, with the way the Lions have played, of, okay, well, let's look at the X's and O's, and let's look at the matchups, and let's look at the schedule, and how are we going to win 2 of the next 3 weeks, and all these kind of things. The idea of being able to have that kind of locked in and very short-term memory, to me, it kind of gets erased every year when we end up getting this in the Hall of Fame game. And I think it gives you this kind of greater historical understanding and importance in a way that allows you to be able to look at the big picture and just kind of think about the people that built the game and the way that it's kind of been shaped. And I love that that's kind of what this week brings about in Hamilton, which is a true football town. And I think that's why Hamilton appreciates this week so much. But the events that lead up to it, yeah, there's an event this evening, and then you've got tomorrow, Friday night, is the actual induction ceremony with the speeches, which I think John Cornish will probably set the record for the longest and the strangest speech in the Canadian Football Hall of Fame, which we're all looking forward to because I have no clue where he's going to go with that. You give John Cornish a microphone, you better just hop on and hold tight and be there for the ride because you got no clue where it's going. But once he ends up getting off the microphone, then, you know, they get to go out and enjoy themselves. And then Saturday, there'll be a pre-reception at the football game. There'll be lots of Hall of Famers wandering throughout the booth, which is always fun for me as a broadcaster because you never know who's going to pop in and say hello to my color man, Mike Morielli. And then you always get an opportunity to be able to, of course, see the halftime where all the Hall of Famers are appreciated by the crowd as well. It's a great ceremony they put on. And the Tiger Cats, I will say this, like, not just as a guy that's from Hamilton, but as somebody who knows the way the Hall of Fame used to be treated in Hamilton before the Tiger Cats started to invest into it, it makes a difference when you have money behind the Hall of Fame. And that has been a massive difference. When the Tiger Cats invested, when the Tiger Cats welcomed them into the fourth floor of the Champions Club, I think people really started to realize that the Hall of Fame is legitimate. And it's something that I feel like a lot of people need to kind of put onto their kind of schedule, I would say, or at least like their wish list of being able to go to the Hall of Fame game. If you really love the CFL, come to Hamilton for the Hall of Fame game, because the fourth floor of the Champions Club, as it used to be called, it's now the Hall of Fame in Tim Hortons Field. You get an opportunity to walk through where all the busts are, but the busts are all located right outside of where the bar is. And where the bar is on the fourth floor is actually these stand-up tables. It's kind of like a pub feel. And the pub overlooks down onto the field with club seating in it. And there's artifacts and jerseys and old footballs and signed memorabilia and all these things that are in glass cases in the bar. So you can literally grab a drink and wander through from about the 30-yard line on either side and walk horizontally through this club level and just look at artifacts while you're hanging out with family and friends. It's unlike, I mean, I've been to Cooperstown for baseball. I've been to the Naismith Memorial in Massachusetts and Springfield there. I've been to Canton, Ohio to go to the NFL, the Pro Football Hall of Fame. None of those can you go to a football game, watch it, grab a beer from 10 feet away from the artifacts and wander through them. It's a very Canadian experience. It's definitely something that people should look and try and accomplish.
Marshall, the 2021 Grey Cup will be hosted by the city of Hamilton. It's been a long time since the game has been there. I know it's some ways away, but the Tie Cats have already unveiled some plans for the event, which is going to see Tim Hortons Field transform into a party zone. What are your thoughts on the plan so far? And as someone familiar with the area, what would your recommendations for accommodations be for fans coming to the city?
Yeah, I think the accommodation side of thing, it's not as bad as everybody makes it out to be. Now, you might have to make a slight 10-15 minute trip in, but there's plenty of hotels around. There's lots of places to be able to stay. You just have to be kind of wise to it. And I think the Airbnb situation will probably improve as people are getting closer and closer to the event happening. So that's something worth looking into as well, because it's kind of low key and it's, you get to handle yourself. You don't have to deal with all the stress of doing the hotel and that stuff. But when they put out all the sketches, I don't know how you guys kind of received it, but when they put out all the images and the different things of what they were planning to do, I was amazed. I was like, yeah. They're going to shut down the road, and they're going to do what with the main bar, and they're going to do what with the concert and the festival. And I understand that area pretty well, like you're saying. And across the road, there's Bernie Custis Secondary School, which actually opens up this fall. So basically, I mean, they might shut down that school for the week, because I don't think they want all the high school students wandering over inside the Grey Cup concert festival. I don't think students are going to be going to class if there's a concert outside the entire week there. It's just, honestly, I think the whole just block is going to become a party. And I can't wait for that. I probably won't get to enjoy it like a lot of other people, because I'll be working pretty hard, I think, throughout that week, especially depending on who's in the matchup and all the rest. But for me, like, I saw the sketches of everything, and I just thought, like, what a great creative way to be able to appreciate that, because people need to understand, behind the Stipley bar that's in the one end zone that you might see on some of the CFL and TSN broadcasts, it's just a big concrete pad. And it's really cool because you can do things like, it's first responder night in the BC Lions Tie Cats game this Saturday, and they're going to have fire trucks out there, police cars, ambulances. Like, it's a staging area where you can do a lot of really fun activations that get people out that might not be completely interested in football, but they want to be there for the experience. And I feel like that space is great when it's used properly. And I can't imagine a better way to use it than for a Grey Cup festival. So when I saw that they were actually going to open that up, tear down those fences, kind of remove them, move them back out to the road, shut down the road, put the main concert stage up there, have a bar that runs all the way down to the middle of the field. They're going to have so many people that are going to come into this game and just be standing room only there for the experience. It's going to create a really, really unique vibe. So I'm excited for it. I know we're a long ways out, but I think the wheels are starting to turn on people in Hamilton to think about what do they want this Grey Cup to be and how can they contribute to it. And I know from my perspective, being around in Hamilton since 2010 when I came to McMaster, I've always wanted to be at a hometown Grey Cup. I've gone to it in Winnipeg. I've gone to it in Edmonton last year. I've gone to it in BC when I was a player in 2011. Like, I've seen a lot of other places, Ottawa, Toronto, the last couple of years. Never been to one in Hamilton, never been a part of hosting one in Hamilton. So I'm excited to see what shape it kind of takes because there's a lot of potential there.
Yeah, I was certainly impressed with the plans that they released for sure. Marshall, it's been a pleasure. I really enjoy your Twitter account at TSN underscore Marsh, even when you're posting multiple videos on the breakdowns of the Lions offensive line. Thanks for your time tonight. We'd love to chat with you again in the future.
Yeah, absolutely, guys. I appreciate it. And again, I promise that offensive line, it has to improve. It can't get any worse, right, no, guys?
It certainly can't.
Thanks, boys.
Thanks.
Thanks, Marshall.
Mojo, a component of building this podcast and its brand is spending a lot of time on social media, researching for shows, takes me to Twitter and Facebook on a regular basis. And with the team not doing well this season, there's always fans that are upset and critical of the team. And that's okay because they care. But this week I came across some stuff on the Lions Facebook page, and I was really kind of disgusted by what I saw on that Facebook page. And I want to be careful here because I want it understood that I'm not painting all Lions fans with one brush. But some fans, and I put that in quotation marks, need to be better. I'm not going to call anyone out or repeat verbatim what I saw because I don't want to give them attention. I will only say that homophobic and racist comments have no place in our fandom. Secondly, the Lions social media team have a job to do, to represent the team, to build the brand, and interact with fans. They do a fantastic job. They don't find the players, coach the team, or play the games. Insulting their posts is uncalled for and flat-out ignorant. Thirdly, if you don't think that everyone that works for the BC Lions wants to fix it, get your head checked. This is their livelihood, folks. This is how they feed their families. No one cares about fixing this more than the people that work for the BC Lions. So I want to say this. Being a fan gives you the right to voice your opinions on many aspects of the team. From the way the team plays on the field, to ticket prices, to game atmosphere, coaches, players, you name it. You have a right to voice your opinion as a fan. What it does not allow you to do is to be vulgar, rude, and especially racist. If you're guilty of this, smarten up and be better, folks. Social media does not give you a license to be a jackass. Think before you post.
Well said, Brian. Well said. Of course, racism and any sort of homophobic isms or any sort of isms like that, man, has no place in the game, no place on our podcast, no place anywhere. Unfortunately, it happens, but it certainly doesn't belong in the game. And the BC Lions online media has been over and over again has been praised for how good they are. They're certainly doing a good job. Like you mentioned, they don't have nothing to do with the on-field product. So, but you know, Brian, it's a sign of the times. People are freaking keyboard warriors who would never say a word to somebody's face. Right. And that's why, I mean, I know I'm glad it's part of your job. I can't stand social media. I'm on it. It's almost like, you know, I'm not happy that I drive a gas car, but that's the way it is. And social media can be such a dank, deep, dark hole, man. So you got to be careful while you're out there, folks. And let's be kind to each other. Hey, being an asshole is not going to make us win the Grey Cup.
Yeah, and it's funny because, you know, the people that post this kind of stuff, and I know, like I said, I'm not painting all Lions fans with a brush here. There's people out there that strictly go on social media to make themselves feel better by putting down other people. And, you know, you're always going to have those people. We've seen it for years on social media. But, you know, that just kind of
really sparked something in me this week. There were some comments directed toward Devon Claybrooks. There was some comments directed towards the Lions when they changed their logo on the Facebook page to represent the Pride weekend that just happened here in Vancouver. You know, just don't post. You know, if you want to be an asshole, just don't post. And if you hate the BC Lions so much, what are you doing on their Facebook page to start with? You know, so like you say, there's a lot of crap out there, but there's a lot of good stuff too. And social media is certainly, you know, one of the big reasons why this podcast exists. So just be smarter, folks, and be kinder, as Mojo said, and don't take things so seriously. This is a football game and it's a sport. And it's there for our enjoyment, not to insult people. And if you think that your comments are getting back to Devon Claybrooks, think again, because he's not spending any time on that social media page. He's working his ass off trying to get this team turned around. So, you know, you're not serving any purpose by insulting him on the BC Lions Facebook page anyway. That's it for episode 139, and I want to thank our guests, Julio Caravetta and Marshall Ferguson, for joining us tonight. Thanks to our sponsor, Metal Rocks. Make sure to visit bclionsden.ca, click the link to their site, and see all the awesome handcrafted jewelry that they have to offer. This show is part of the Canadian Football Podcast Network. Make sure to check out all the great shows that are a part of it at cfpodnetwork.ca, and follow the network on Twitter at cfpodnetwork. For more on this week's opponent, check out the Podski Wee Wee podcast on iTunes. Please subscribe and listen to the show on your favorite podcast app. Visit us at bclionsden.ca. Follow us on Twitter at bclionsden and at mojokemp, and on Instagram at bclionsden_podcast. That's podcast, PAWGCAST. Until next week, I'm Brian Wawershin. On behalf of Mojo Kemp, enjoy the games this weekend. And as always, roar you Lions roar.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.